Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today we're playing a game of trick or treat in the spirit of Halloween with my guest from the All-NBA podcast and DNVR, Adam Mattes. That's coming up right now. All right, joining me now from the All-NBA podcast and DNVR, Adam Mattes. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing great, brother. Glad to be on the show with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on again today. Since it's the day before Halloween, we're going to play a little game of trick or treat. Trick, it's an early season trend that's fake, not going to keep going. Treat, it's real. This is actually something that's going to continue on way past the first week of the NBA season. Let's start off with one of the biggest trick or treats so far this year. The Lakers, they're 3-2. No LeBron James. Luka's played only two games. And this is largely because of Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves this season, Adam, has scored 26-9, 25-11, 51-9, 41-5, 28-16. Austin Reeves is an all-NBA player. Trick or treat?
Oh, man. I don't think he's going to end up an all-NBA player. I think here's the thing. I don't think any of this stuff is a fluke. He's a really good player. And when you give him the ball and make him the number one guy, you're going to have performances like this. I think he's capable of it. But his role's probably going to change a lot throughout the course of the season. So that's why I'm going to say trick, not treat on this one. But I'm not trying to hate on him too hard, KOC. I think he's actually great.
I mean, he seems like he's really taken a leap here. Like, not just in volume, but in efficiency as well. Like, the types of shots he's taken. Like, he has Jaden McDaniels defending him. He's driving into Rudy Gobert. He's going against the best of the best on the defensive end. He hit a step-back three against Drew Holiday in their game against the Blazers. He's doing high degree of difficulty things. And so he's not going against the third-best defender. He's doing this against the best defenders on the opponent. That's where I'm looking at things here. I'm like, okay, Austin Reeves has experienced a year-to-year improvement so far throughout his career. Last year, he averaged 20 a game. This year, up to 34.2 points per game with 68.7% true shooting. It's absurd. 11.6 free throw attempts per game. And a lot of it, you know, people say, oh, he's grifting. He's the white SGA and all that. But he does get legitimate contact a lot because he's an aggressive driver. He's a really good playmaker. And so does he make All-NBA one of the 15 best guys in the league? I lean towards trick just because there's so many great players, but at the same time, like the ability, Adam, that feels like part of just something that's happened year to year with him, and that's where the real treat is with Austin Reeves, I'd say.
Some of these numbers, though, man, are just like when we get four games into a season, the number like 11.6 free throw attempts. Well, he had 22 in one game, so it kind of weighs everything up, weighs the average up. I will say this. I'm also curious, and this pertains to him. You said, you know, the question about being a foul grifter, he is one of them. And look, if the league's going to incentivize this, why shouldn't players do this? I'm not even knocking him. But I am curious, you've seen all of the stats about foul drawing in the NBA, and I do wonder if the referees are going to like tighten up on that. And if so, who does it impact more or less? He might be one of the guys because he is so good at the types of fouls that I find the most infuriating. But we'll see. I'm inclined to think that this is a four-game sample size, like hot stretch for him more than anything.
It very well might be. I mean, but like the foul thing, Austin Reeves is third in the NBA right now in free throw attempts per game. Luka's number one, 14.5 in his two games. Benedict Mathurin, 13 a game in his two games. Then Austin Reeves, then Tyrese Maxey, Paolo Banchero, Zion Williamson, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, when you have more than Giannis and Zion Williamson, it's pretty telling about how this season is going for you so far in the very tiny sample. But I do think like the real treat with him is that this is continued improvement. And for the Lakers, it does look like they do indeed have a third star, or maybe actually a second star behind Luka, depending on what happens with LeBron James in the weeks and months to come. All right, next one. Three winless teams right now on Thursday morning as we record: the Nets, the Pacers, and the Pelicans. These three teams will have the three worst records in the NBA. Trick or treat?
The Nets and the Pelicans, for sure. Who was the third team you said?
The Pacers. Pacers.
The Pacers are going to win. The Pacers are actually, I think, a competitive team. They've had some rough luck, I think, with some of these early games. But if you look at those other ones, I think the Nets are bad by design. They're kind of fun bad. You watch them, you never think they're going to win, but they're at least getting up some funny shots. Michael Porter is doing his thing. But the Pelicans, to me, this might be the story early on. First of all, they just played Denver last night. We're recording this on Thursday. I don't know if I've ever seen a team that has so clearly quit on their season than what I saw from the Pelicans last night. That was a team that had no spirit, had no care. They would come out of timeouts down 20 and somehow be on their heels. I don't know when Willie Green's getting fired, but it's sometime soon because I can tell when a team has quit. And the worst part is Derek Queen, who they traded their first round pick for, he seemed to be a guy. Like, usually if you're a rookie and your team is quit, you're still trying to prove yourself. You're brand new, you're fourth game in. Even that guy looked like he didn't want to be on the court last night. That's a disaster situation. I think they might have one of the two worst records in the entire NBA and no draft pick to show for it.
Adam, it is completely depressing for Pelicans fans. It really is one of the most sad stories in all of sports, really. I mean, when you think about a fan base that in June, they had the Pacers first round pick, top four protected, and then they traded it for this year's, the 2025 pick, number 23. Then they trade 23 in their own best of first round pick, their own or Bucks first round pick in 2026. And of course, right now they're winless and they trade that to move up 10 spots. And now they're in this position where two of the three worst records in the league are the Pacers and the Pelicans. And I agree with you for what it's worth. I think it's a treat that Nets are going to be one of the worst teams. No duh. Pacers, they're going to win some games. Like, I'd say trick there. They're not going to be horrible. Yeah. The Pelicans, I've been split on them. I feel like the names on the page should be better than this. But there's something that you're talking about that you touched on that you saw last night against Denver. There's something with the character, the mood of this team that is just going to lead to a ton of losses like the one we saw last night, especially in the Western Conference. Like, they just look like their team, some people thought they'd be better than Portland. Portland plays with spirit and love and togetherness. The Pelicans, they're on the opposite end of the spectrum. And until Willie Green at some point probably gets fired, I don't know if that changes anything. It probably doesn't. I think it's
probably not.
Probably not because it's actually not just the coach. It's the players in the locker room that sometimes dictate tone and character more than even a coach can. And that's where I look at this Pelicans team and I'm like, oh my God, this could be a disaster. And the Atlanta Hawks could be the team that ends up with the number one pick just for trading out 10 spots to get Asa Newell, who they were probably going to take at number 13 anyway.
It's arguably, I think it was underrated even at the time how bad that trade was. But if you're Atlanta, maybe it even dictates your season a little bit. It's early. We'll see how they normalize. But if I'm Atlanta, I'm looking at that and saying, I almost all but guarantee a top three pick coming up in this draft. That's how bad the situation is right now and how good that pick situation is for them. But yes, Herb Jones looks like he doesn't want to be there. Trey Murphy looks like he doesn't want to be there. Zion looks like he doesn't want to be there. That is a team that, to me, has no sign of turning it around anytime soon.
Real quick, I just want to read an email from Patrick, who emailed me. He said, KOC, I am dying. I can't watch Willie Green coach one more game. Oh, man. No feel for the game, horrible rotations, never takes timeouts to stop a run, and most of all, clearly has no respect from the players, which creates an environment devoid of accountability. I'd say Patrick hit the nail on the head about the Pelican situation. Let's move on to the next one here with your Denver Nuggets, Adam. Jamal Murray, averaging 27 points per game right now. Jamal Murray is going to have a career-best regular season, trick or treat.
I think this one's treat for sure, assuming he stays healthy, knock on wood, but I mean, this was the big storyline with the Nuggets coming into the year, at least one of the major storylines, which was Jamal Murray had not been coming into camp in shape over the last several years. Even before the injury, it was a trend with him. I think he heard all the noise. He's been very vocal about it in the lead up to the season and preseason, saying, hey, my goal this year is to be ready in October and November. Players have been talking about it. I think his leadership has taken a different level. You saw his organized team workouts and camps and things. The entire team went to L.A., in the month of August as a workout that he organized. So he's, I think, matured and grown into the leadership role that is required of him being the second best player on the team. But more than anything, he looks like he is in shape. He looks like he is on a mission to sort of prove a point. And he just looks great. He's getting to his spots quickly. He's getting his three-point shot off, and he's finishing. So, right. And he's playing defense, by the way. It's not just like he's sacrificing on one end of the floor. He's playing great all-around basketball, and it's one of the main reasons I'm so high on the Nuggets.
He looks like playoff Jamal Murray, and what more could you ask for at this point of the year? After he's come into camp and the regular season out of shape, it's felt for what, two, three consecutive years at this point, and here maybe we are. More. He looks awesome. Yeah, and I think for him, you know, it's definitely a treat. I think we're going to get the best regular season of his career, and you hope he can just sustain it into April, May, and maybe June for the Nuggets. Next one, the Miami Heat. All right, so there's 3-1 this year. But they're first in the Eastern Conference in net rating. They have a 120.1 offensive rating, which is seventh in the whole NBA, a 106.4 defensive rating, which is fourth in the entire NBA. They have a 13.7 net. That's what leads the entire East. And they're doing it with this brand new offensive system. It's the polar opposite of what they did last year, a bit slower paced, especially when they had Butler on the floor. And even without him this year, they're doing a lot similar to what Memphis did in the first half of last year before they abandoned it, fired their coaches, got rid of Taylor Jenkins. The Heat don't set screens in the half court. They're last in the NBA in pick and rolls per game, last in handoffs per game, and that's by a wide margin. So far this season, they're averaging 21.3 pick and rolls per game as of October 30th this morning. The second lowest in NBA history, or the lowest in NBA history, because we'll see how the Heat finish here, is the 2018-19 Sixers at 38. Wow. And so that they've pretty much halved what is the lowest in NBA history so far through a week. And so with the Heat, Adam, this amazing new offense that's leading to great results, is it a trick or a treat?
I think it's a little bit of a treat, and especially the stylistic part that you're talking about here. I mean, you see it's a lot of off-ball screening, so instead of on-ball screening, you're getting guys open. But I think more than anything, they're not the actual stat about how many screens, it's almost misleading. It's really more of a style choice, and that style choice is it's a pick-and-roll league, but teams have evolved all of these different schemes to contain the pick and roll. What teams like Miami and last year Memphis say is, why even screen? If we have guys that can get around the first line of defense, don't allow for the trap. Don't allow for the rotations or allow for any of that. Spread it out, catch on the move, and just have all your guys attack as often as you can. And you have a bunch of different types of attackers on that team. Quick guards who can get into the paint. Jaime Jaquez with his like herky jerk style of just getting around guys. So you spread people out, you don't allow for the trap, and you just try to constantly attack, drive, kick, drive, kick, drive, kick until you create enough of an advantage. And I think it's very effective if you have the right personnel and you're disciplined enough to execute it the right way. Miami has always been disciplined in their execution, so I think it's a treat.
They put 146 on the Grizzlies, who a lot of the players on that roster experienced this last year. And I think with Memphis, it didn't work in part because Ja didn't embrace it, but also it doesn't work for Ja. Ja is a high pick and roll player. He is someone who operates within the type of system to great success over his entire career. But for the Miami Heat, you nailed it, Adam. Like a lot of these guys on this team, it fits them stylistically, especially with Jaime Jaquez. He's playing the best he has in his entire career after a down sophomore year, a little bit of a sophomore slump for him. He's been sensational this season, and I think it's in part a product of the system. The Heat are using him back to the basket post-ups. They're using him bringing the ball up the floor. At UCLA, all 4 years he played there, he was just one of the best cutters and movers without the basketball in his hands in the whole nation, even before he became an on-ball star there. And so I think with him, he's just leaning on some of the qualities that he's used to make him a first-round pick. And now he's doing this in this brand-new system with better talent around him. So are they going to be a top-four team in the Eastern Conference? Maybe they don't sustain that because there's some teams underwhelming so far. But ultimately, I do think their offense is a treat because I thought the same thing last year with Memphis. I think there's something to that. That philosophy that Noah LaRoche, their assistant coach, helped innovate and bring there before they decided to get rid of everybody. I think there's something to it. And I think Eric Spoelstra saw that in Memphis last year. And he's like, as you described, Adam, why even bring a screener into it? If they're just going to switch or trap, why give them that opportunity when we have these guys off ball in motion with movement and pace where we can get this guy towards the basket or free up a three-point shooter by using the gravity that happens with that slingshot towards the basket? I think there's something to that. And I do wonder, like, they're the only team in the league that plays to these extremes. But I do wonder if this is something that this could be a trend. This is the second team that's done it. to this level? Will there be more teams that start bringing layers of this into their offense, even if it's not to this level?
100% yes, I think, on that last question. And I think, first of all, part of what makes it so difficult is the pick and roll defense is the starting point of every team's defense. So all year you're working on, okay, we start with how we cover that, and then we go to how we rotate behind it. Well, if there's no pick and roll, you almost have to reset from the foundation up. So when you play them, it's like everything changes. And I think that's one of your regular season advantages. But even teams like Oklahoma City, even though they're technically screens, a lot of what they do is guard-to-guard flat screening and then slip out into open space. So like Isaiah Joe is the great example of this. Late in games, they would often run Isaiah Jones on a flat screen on Shea and then exit him to the corner. It operates very similar to what Miami's doing in that it's not actually a screen. You're just trying to get the defense moving and then get out into that five-out spacing so that Shea can operate with as much space as possible. So even though those technically count as screens, it's still something similar. And yes, it's a copycat league. When teams find success with it, it's going to infiltrate the entire league. Every offense is going to have pieces of it at some point soon.
I think that's spot on. And that's like kind of the tricky thing with some of the data about pick and roll. Like if you're seeing a ghost screen or someone slipping out of a screen, it's not the same type of screen as Rudy Gobert or Nikola Jokic setting a hard on-ball screen. Steven Adams screen is different than Klay Thompson slipping from Stephen Curry back in the day with the Warriors. Totally. Like, it's just a different stratosphere of what it means. So I think to your point, maybe there needs to be a differentiation between what types of screens we would be setting. Next one, sticking in the Eastern Conference here, Adam. The top Eastern Conference standings as of Thursday morning, the Bulls and the Sixers undefeated at the top of the East, ahead of the Heat and the Bucks, both 3-1. The Cavs, Pistons, Knicks, three of the favorites in the East, trailing there as well. Hornets, Hawks, Celtics rounding out the top 10 so far. Let's start with the undefeated Bulls since they are at the top. The Bulls, yeah. Here we are. They're starting five so far this year. Nikola Vucevic, Isaac Okoro, Matis Buzelis, Josh Giddey, Trey Jones. They have been absolutely sensational so far. 114.9 offensive rating, 106.2 defensive rating. The Bulls are actually really good. Trick or treat.
Yeah. I'm going to say trick, at least to the degree that they're at. And even honestly, just as like this, like top five or six team in the East, I think will come down. What I think is happening, first of all, I do like this team. I think Josh Giddey is a little underrated in how good he's going to elevate the floor of your offense. He's going to get the ball up the floor quickly. You're going to get into transition, the shooting, which is something too, they do really well.
In the half court too, Adam, his shooting has improved. So he's not a liability like he was in his last playoff series for OKC.
But even in the half court, it's more that he can get you into your offense quickly. So you're operating with a full shot clock in every possession, even in the half court, which is really valuable. Trey Jones, I think, does similar things, can play with pace and get you into your offense. So to me, I think that the team is actually good, but I think the reason they're off to such a hot start is you look around at teams like Orlando, Atlanta, even Detroit, there's meaningful changes to the roster and they're adjusting to those. I think Chicago got to hit the ground running a little bit better than some of those teams because there's a lot of continuity. They already kind of know what they are. And so I think that's given them an advantage that'll probably wear off at some point in the year. They're a good team. They're not a great team, but they're off to a great start, which is fun.
Yeah, I'd say trick if you're expecting top three, top four in these. Treat if you're expecting them to be in the middle of the pack, top end of the play-in, fun, feeling positive, competitive. You're feeling like hope with Matis Buzelis. And by the way, I mean, 6'10", some of the stuff he does off the dribble, Adam. I mean, Buzelis is coming along very, very nicely for Chicago. So I'd say treat in that regard. The undefeated Sixers. They are 4-0 as well. Joel Embiid has been up and down so far, but ultimately we see Vijay Edgecombe and Tyrese Maxey just absolutely shredding so far, especially Maxey averaging 37.5 points per game. Vijay Edgecombe 22.3 points per game. They've been great so far, leading the Sixers. Are they legitimate East contenders, Adam? Is that a trick or a treat?
Contenders, I'm going to say trick. But they are maybe the most fun team in the East right now. And I think they're also really good. Here's why I'm going to go trick. There is a narrow needle for them to thread, in my opinion. Joel Embiid clearly does not look like he is anywhere close to the athletic form that we saw previously. He can still score. He can draw fouls. He can hit the mid-range jumper. He can get to the post, and he still has his feathery touch. But he's not dynamic offensively, athletically, and he's certainly not dynamic defensively. He can hardly move there. So you're in this weird identity crisis where you have this effective four-guard lineup that they've deployed with Tyrese Maxey, Edgecombe, Kelly Oubre, and Quentin Grimes. All of those guys can get by their defender. And when you put four of them on out there, you stretch the floor and you just attack from all angles. And it's been so fun to watch. I think Embiid does have a role to play in that system as a high screener, pick and pop player. And I think that would actually work well. And maybe that's where this all ends up. No longer as Joel Embiid, the fulcrum of your offense, but as a part of this four out, one in, really dynamic, quick guard play offense that could work. I just am skeptical that a team's going to be able to re-identify themselves over the course of one season. So they have the upside. I really like Edgecombe, but I think that they're going to be a team with split personality disorder for most of the year.
It's possible. It's possible, Adam. But I think with that said, Tyrese Maxey, perhaps this is a real leap. VJ Edgecombe looks like the for real sure deal. Yeah, I know Tim Legler raved about him on your show. He went on Bill Simmons this week, raved about VJ Edgecombe. I mean, Tim has hit the nail on the head with the way in which he moves in the floor, the decisiveness in his decisions. And the athleticism is just absurd with Edgecombe. And I think Maxey as well. It's like, remember when like it's Harden, Maxey? It was kind of like one guy's moving slow and James Harden, one guy moving fast, kind of a fire and ice type of thing between Harden and Maxey. With Edgecombe and Maxey, they're both explosive and fast and speedy.
So fast.
And I think that's where now it's Embiid who's juxtaposed against those guys. Is he's a bit more plodding, moves slower. But after his really horrible first game, he had 4 points on 9 shots. And the opener against Boston. And I had Spike Eskin on the show at that time, and we're talking about Embiid. How concerning is it? Because he looked great in his single preseason game. And Spike is like, well, it depends if you're an Embiid supporter or an Embiid hater. You're going to use this as part of your argument either way. But since then, while he's been on a minutes restriction, he's looked a lot more like himself. He had 20 points against Charlotte in 20 minutes. He had 25 against the Wizards in 23 minutes. And of course, these aren't contending opponents. However, he did look better as a scorer. Defensively, he's not quite the same, though. But they also haven't had Paul George. And the East is wide open. And so I'd lean towards the window's open a crack for this to be a treat, Adam. It's open just a little bit.
It's just okay.
You're shutting it entirely? I know it's a lot of ifs. It's a hell of a lot of ifs.
This is if VJ Edgecombe can keep this up over 82 games, and if Embiid can alter his game to fit the style, and if Paul George comes back and is able to be a value add and not change the identity. This is just why I love it. They're a great story, and I think that they have a real future now with Maxey and Edgecombe. Those are two really are players that you should be excited about for a long time if you're in Philadelphia. And it could work with this group. It's really hard for a team to reestablish an identity on the fly when that identity is so different from what you would expect when everybody is healthy. And right now it is Embiid, who's been the anchor of your team, that probably is going to have to adjust and alter his game to fit the style that I think makes sense for the rest of the healthy roster. And then Paul George, what a weird X factor that is. When is he coming back? What is his role in all of this? Does he fit into that system? Is he off ball more? It's just too many questions for me to think that it's contender status. But I think they'll be very good and have a very good year.
Yeah, I think contender status might be definitely. There's a lot of ifs. There's a hell of a lot of ifs with Philadelphia. Just a reminder that right now in the Yahoo Fantasy app, you can draft a new league in Yahoo's newest fantasy basketball format called High Score. It's a clean, simplified, brand new way to play fantasy basketball. You draft 10 players, you start 6. You start your lineup once per week. It's super, super easy. I've enjoyed it. I'm in 2 leagues, 2 work leagues. I'm liking it so far. So the way it works with High Score is it takes only your starters' best single games, and then you go head-to-head against one of your league opponents. And so the NBA season's still early. You can still sign up. Draft a team on High Score today in the Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com. Another team that people are feeling some ifs about right now, the Orlando Magic. The Magic so far this season, their defense is in the bottom 10. It looks like it's fallen off a cliff. I can't personally imagine that this team just forgot how to defend. I'd imagine that this is going to improve over the course of the season. Maybe not. Where I still have concerns is offensively. They're still in the bottom 10 in offensive rating, 27th, just like last year. They're last in the NBA in three-point attempts. They're 28th in the NBA in three-point percentage so far this season. And so with the Magic, their offense, they add Desmond Bain, they add Tyus Jones, their shooting is still in the bottom of the league. And so with Orlando, there's concerns, in my opinion, on both ends of the floor here. The Magic aren't actually good. Trick or treat.
If the answer for treat is that they're not actually good, I mean, good is a relative word. They're supposed to be great this year. So I'll change your question and say, are they great? And I'll say trick. Unfortunately, this is one of my hotter takes, but I actually fully believe it. And I believed it for a while, but wanted to let it play out. I would not want to build around Paolo Banchero. And he is such a talented player. He has all of these physical gifts. He has all of this talent that he has added. The incredible footwork, just incredible one-on-one ability to score on his man, especially when he gets downhill. But he is such a difficult player, in my opinion, for you to build your roster around, because he's an okay passer, not a great one. He's not super dynamic there. And he is an atrocious shooter with bad shot selection. And on top of that, he holds the ball for so long. And that's one of the things, is when you're a volume scorer, Kevin Durant gets to hold the ball for a long time. He's so efficient. It makes sense. When you slow the possession down for Paolo every single time, I just think it makes it so difficult for you to build a team around. And then on top of that, Orlando loses too many margins. Jason Tim brought this up. My co-host on Fridays on All-NBA brought this up, that they were near the top of the league in forcing turnovers, but near the bottom of the league in generating fast break points. When you have a strength that you don't capitalize on like that, it makes me think that, yeah, there's some weaknesses that they're not going to be able to overcome with their roster. I don't think, unfortunately, this might be a flawed roster and they never get over the hump with this group.
There are currently, so far this season, 27 players that have attempted at least 50 shots. Banchero ranks 26th in effective field goal percentage so far this year. Shaedon Sharp is worst. But Paolo Banchero, and some, a lot of those shots with Banchero, I talked about on my show on Monday, how, you know, everybody talked about the shot he took at the end of the game against, who was it, Atlanta? I'm forgetting off already off the top of my head. Atlanta? No, the Sixers. Whoever it was. The Sixers at the end of the game. And it was a horrible shot. There's 10 seconds left on the clock. Should have kept it moving. People kind of forget about, nobody watched on the game over the weekend where he shot his team out of it in the final fourth quarter. In the final 8 minutes, he went 1-for-7. Franz Wagner, Desmond Bane didn't take a shot. It was Banchero over and over and over in the game. And I think with him, this is something that has been a problem for a while. And a lot of people are holding on to what he did in the playoffs last year when he was more efficient. But it was a sample of 5 games. Yeah. And I don't think that outweighs everything we've seen from him throughout his career. And I'm a guy who, I had Banchero ranked first in his draft class. I put him ahead of Chet, which looks like it was the wrong decision. I put him ahead of Jabari Smith, which may or may not be the right choice. I think Banchero has all the talent in the world, but he just has some missing pieces between the ears when it comes to reading the floor with his decision-making. And that's where it's like, if I'm the Magic, I'm not saying I'm going to shop Paolo Banchero, but at the same time, Adam, I do have major, major questions if I'm looking in the mirror at my team saying, can we actually take the leap with him dominating the ball over Franz Wagner, over Desmond Bain, over Jalen Suggs? They have so much talent on this roster. They shouldn't be coming out of the gates like this. Should not be happening defensively through the leadership aspect, through the tone setting, and it definitely shouldn't be happening offensively. This is a Jamal Mosley thing as well. How are you still last in the NBA in three-point attempts after these pieces you add? I can't fathom how this was a front office objective this summer, and really not a lot has changed offensively. I think there's something with the star player in Banchero, but also with the coaching in Mosley as well. Agreed. The front office is going to have to take a good hard look at this if this continues, or if they don't take another step forward this year.
And I like Mosley. I'm rooting for him. Like I've enjoyed covering him, just, you know, as a media member covering a coach. But like I said, there's too many margins that they lose. And when you see, obviously, the development about Vaccaro and the way that their defense has fallen off of a cliff, their offense hasn't taken a step up, that's concerning because their roster is better right now than it was last year, but they look a lot worse. We'll see what happens.
All right. I asked some people on Threads, what has impressed them? What has disappointed them so far this season? There were a ton of replies. A lot of people said the Magic. A lot of people responded with Wemby, as you'd expect, for what impressed or disappointed them. Arnold responded saying, Jonathan Kuminga. Whatever Jonathan Kuminga did over the offseason to make himself valuable in the Warriors' rotation, rebounding, the on-ball defense, knowing when to attack versus make the extra pass. I thought Arnold, as his username is written out, Arnold, he's spot on that Kuminga is one of them. So, Adam, has Jonathan Kuminga figured it out? Trick or treat.
I this is too early to rule on this one, to be honest with you. I'm gonna say treat because I want to believe it to be treat, because he has been, through five games now, has been everything I would have hoped he would become. And I'll be honest with you, this was one of the guys that I had not fully written off, but sort of soft written off, because he has all the individual talent in the world, but I didn't think he would ever agree to or understand how to play within the beautiful system that the Golden State Warriors play. That's exactly what he's been doing so far. He's the plays you're seeing on screen right now, pin down, slip to the basket, reading the court, understanding when it's his moment, when it's not, and really just figuring out how all of the pieces work together, not trying to find your own shot, but figuring out where your shot comes within two and three man actions. I think he's been fantastic, and I think he's essential for what this Warriors team does. I know some people thought, okay, he signs the extension, let's get to the deadline and let's trade him, you know, find another piece. The Warriors are great, but they only have so much athleticism on their roster. Athleticism is an essential component in this modern NBA, in my opinion. When you have Oklahoma City and Minnesota and some of these super Houston, super athletic teams, you need athletes to go up against them. He represents the athleticism bridge that saves the Warriors. So I think he's been fantastic. It's too early for me to declare this fully a treat, but I'm going to say I like what I see.
I like what I see too, Adam. I mean, because it's not just like he's having some hot scoring performances, taking spot up threes, some ISO possessions where he hits a really tough pull up, a floater.
Right, exactly.
It's the cutting. It's the movement. It's the passing. He looks like a guy that belongs in the Warriors system. Like, that's what it looks like to me. Like, it just looks like he's been here. This is his fourth year. It looks like 4 years of experience. It looks like a guy who's starting to get it. It looks like a guy who knew what he was doing this summer, and that's why he dragged this all out and as long as they did. It looks like a guy who wanted to bet on himself because he knew what was about to happen. And maybe it doesn't continue. Maybe he gets cold. But just the way in which he's happening, the way he's handling, the decisions he makes, some of the passes he's made, man, like – really, really hard to fathom considering what he came into the league like from the G League Ignite. So I'm going to say treat. And that changes the evaluation of the Warriors as a whole. And you hit on it. Like, you have Stephen Curry, you have Draymond Green, you have Jimmy Butler. But if Jonathan Kuminga is indeed this player adding that athletic element, and he does not hinder you with that beautiful game aspect with his connective ability now, I mean, that's a pretty, pretty big X factor within the Western Conference playoff race. It is, undoubtedly, does change things.
And he represents, by the way, a mismatch in transition, which is another wrinkle to their offense, and he understands where that happens. So if he gets down in transition and there's a point guard guarding him, the Warriors bend their defense now to run the system, but around him. And that's what's beautiful about it, is it's not just fit in around us. It's now that you fit in around us, we're going to fit in around you when the matchup calls for it. And so far, it's been really, really fun to watch. And it's classic Warriors stuff. I swear they're the only team that seems to be able to figure these things out, even if it took longer than we thought.
Hey, Joe Lacob, the two timelines. I told you so.
Eventually, it was true.
Eventually. All right, let's move on to one of the bigger trends happening so far in the NBA, and that's the full court press. Through Wednesday's games, 4.8% of total possessions featured a press. And sometimes this is the full 94 feet. Sometimes this is a bit softer, but the pickup point, as you guys discuss and outline on your all NBA socials, is higher for 2/3 of the league so far this season. And if you look at the numbers, as you see on screen right here, if you're watching on YouTube, stayed pretty flat for a long while. Around 1% of possessions from 09 until 2018 featured a press. And then it's ticked up a little bit, 1.6% in 2020, 2.5% in 2024, and this year nearly up to 5%. And the Blazers and are one of the teams really weighing this out. They take one quarter of their possessions they're pressing. The Raptors are at nearly 1/5. Nine teams are doing it on over 5% of their defensive possessions. So, Adam, I ask you, the full court press trend is here to stay. Trick or treat?
Oh, 100% treat. This one is here to stay, and it's so fascinating. I mean, some of this is a copycat league. We talked about athleticism. I think as the league has gotten more saturated with talent, that you have the ability to go deeper into your rotation, which allows you to play harder while you're on the floor. So that lends itself to full court press. But how about this theory? It's also a little correlated to the CBA, because in years past, where maybe your CBA, a lot of your salary cap was going to your big three, everybody's building around a big three. Now it might make a little bit more sense. Everything's a little bit more flat. There's the guy you end up having to have your 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th guys on your roster are a little bit closer to your 5th or 6th guys than they were maybe a decade ago. And as a result, why not play a 10, 11-man rotation and use those guys to full court press? So yes, everybody's copying Indiana, Oklahoma City, and I think it's a real trend that's here to stay.
I would agree with you. This is a treat for sure. And, you know, and I wrote in an article earlier this week about they had that graphic on screen about the full court press and focused a little bit on the Blazers. And, you know, one of the things that's come to mind for me is exactly what you said. This is like a cheap thing that you can copy. Like, we see the Pacers do it to great extremes last year in their finals run. They did a one quarter of their possessions they pressed in the finals against OKC. The Blazers did it a bit last year as well. But this is something like, you can be bad. You just need players who try. Players who try sometimes are on the league minimum, or they're guys that are on their second team and they're really trying to get that next contract and they're trying to prove themselves. And these are the things that you do to prove yourself. These are the little things you do to get wins over the course of the long 82-game regular season. And so teams, like a lot of the teams that are doing it right now, aren't good teams. Like the Celtics are doing it. Like the Blazers aren't a contender, but they're a competitive team. But it's these younger teams that are hungry. And so I think ultimately, Adam, like, there is logic to it. I remember I said this on the show earlier in the week, but I want to share it with you as well. I interviewed Daryl Morey back in the 2016-17 season. It was my first year working for the Ringer. And I asked Daryl, what do you think the next trend is? And he's like, more press, more trapping, more aggressive defense as a way to kind of mess with the offenses. At the time, not every team was taking over 40% of their shots from, that wasn't the league average, 40% of shots being taken from three. It was just Houston as the only team taking over 40% of their shots from three. But he felt that would eventually be a response to the increased offense happening league-wide. Well, for seven years, it stayed pretty flat. And then slowly but surely, more and more teams have started doing it with more frequency. And I think that there is something to that as kind of a curveball to throw at offenses sometimes, to throw them out of rhythm and get them started late in their half-court sets.
Well, also, I think this part of it is that you really can't guard in today's NBA. There's too many good shooters, too many good dynamic players. It's really hard to guard in the half court. So it's almost a little bit of a Hail Mary of full court press and let's try to wear them out, because we're not going to stop them in the half court anyway. It's the same reason a lot of teams are running zones up, also up in the NBA. And I talked to David Adelman about this earlier in the week about, well, why are you trying to do when you run zone? And he said part of it is, you want to dictate what the offense does. So yes, we're vulnerable to these 3-point shots, but we're vulnerable to, he didn't say this, but I'll say it, the guys like Dylan Brooks of the year. If we can force shots to Dylan Brooks and away from Devin Booker, we'll take it, even if they're good quality shots for Dylan Brooks. And then part of it is, you just can't guard anyone. So you might as well throw out some different things, full court press, zone. You can't guard anyone anyway. Let's see if we can't just mix it up a little.
Well, speaking about not being able to guard anybody, some of the stat lines we've seen this year, we've already talked about Austin Reeves earlier, but the Stars are posting just massive, massive stat lines so far this season. Giannis Antetokounmpo averaging 36 points a game with 14 rebounds, 7 assists. SGA putting up numbers like he did last year, 35, 6, and 5. Luka in his two games, 46, 11, and 8. Wemby, 31, 14, and 5 blocks. And Jokic, not scoring, only 20 points per game, but almost 15 rebounds, 11 assists per game so far. These massive stat lines, Adam, are they the new norm? Is this a trick or a treat?
Man, I'm inclined to say this is a trick and that they'll come down a little bit, but I really don't know. The league, the stars around the league and the ability to like maximize or optimize how you space and finish plays around stars seems to be high. And this is kind of what I was getting to with Austin Reeves a little bit earlier of, I think he's a great player. I think putting him as the number one and then having the guys around him almost makes him more valuable, but he's going to have to go back to being more as one of the off-ball guys around Luka, or at least more off-ball, and his numbers will come down. But I still think these numbers are a little high. I mean, some of these, we saw in the first week all of these 50-point performances, and guys are getting to the line at an incredible rate. So I think they'll come down a little bit, but the truth is, Kevin, we have a lot of really, really good players and a lot of really uniquely great players, players that are great in unique ways. I think more than ever before, Wemby, Giannis, Shea, Luka, Jokic, those five guys you have on screen, they're all great in very unique ways. They're hard to comp historically because of how unique their skill sets are. And so I think we'll have really great stat lines, just maybe not 46, 11, and 9 or whatever it is Luka has.
Yeah, I think with some of these guys, it's not unthinkable. Like Giannis could average 36. It could happen. I mean,
yeah.
Jokic at some point, that scoring number I'd imagine goes up, unless this is the year that he's just going to be playmaker Jokic because he has so much other talent on the roster. And Wemby seems to be empowered this year with the Spurs. They're feeding him. They're looking for him, yeah, getting him at rim opportunities. His entire three-point rate has dropped significantly. They're getting him to the rim. And so we saw SGA do this before. Luka, I'd imagine that's definitely going to come down, especially once he's back with Reeves performing like this and if/when LeBron returns. But with Giannis in particular, he's the one I look at and I'm like, okay, this could be the best statistical season of Giannis's career for sure, given the type of roster he has around him with a bunch of, you know, hardworking defenders, cutters, movers, facilitators, connecting pieces. This feels like this could be the year Giannis puts up 36, 14, and 7. I don't think that's unreasonable with him. And with Wemby, I think it's very possible he sustains that as well.
The Wemby blocks one is going to be an interesting one. Because five blocks a game, it's only a little bit up from what he has averaged. So I think it is possible. But then he just had a zero block game the other day. I want to see what that number becomes, because to me, that's his most impressive skill. Of all the things he does, it's still the fact that nobody wants to go within 15 feet of him when he's on the floor.
He ended up getting one block in that game. Ended up with one.
Oh, did he get one? So it wasn't a zero.
He continued the streak. He ended up with one. But eventually he's going to have a game where he gets zero, because we see it in every game, especially in that game against Toronto. They just avoid him. Like, there's going to be a game where people just don't go at him.
Zero he's gonna field end up with attempts in the paint.
Like, that's gonna happen someday. Wemby on floor, zero field goal attempts in the paint. Zero. Wemby off the floor, 20.
That's You're right. Happen. It might actually happen.
And we'll be right back after this break. All right, let's do some quick hitters to finish us off here. Con Knipple is the NBA's new Klay Thompson, averaging 16 points per game, 7.5 three-pointers per game, shooting 53.3% from three. Is that a trick or a treat, Adam?
Well, at the moment, I'm going to say a trick, but it's not the worst comp. I'll tell you what, he reminds me so much of like a 90s college shooting guard. Just like his balance and everything is just so perfect. You know, he's kind of slow but effective at getting to the spots he needs to off. Everything he does is very efficient, even if it's slow. I love his game. I like his confidence is through the roof. I don't know if I'm going to go Klay Thompson just yet, but I am a big fan of his, and I am excited to kind of see how what he becomes.
I'm going to say treat, and he could end up better as like an individual player. Does he win more? Well, really? That's unlikely. But I'm going to
really
say treat.
Better.
Because, yeah, I think so. I think that's very possible because he's an elite shooter.
Wow.
off of movement. But what we've seen so far with Charlotte, it's not just the off-ball stuff, the relocations and all that. He's doing a bit off the dribble too. This is something he struggled at in college. He was not effective off the dribble. When I interviewed him earlier this year, he's like, yeah, I know. Like, I wasn't good off the dribble. That's something I'm working on. That's what I need to get better at the most. But he's hitting some side dribble three-pointers, some little stuff out of pick and roll as well. He looks good as a facilitator as well. And I think that's where in this Hornets ecosystem, assuming LaMelo stays as the guy, and so far he's looked sensational for the Hornets, not just as a scorer, but putting in better effort on defense, deflections, movement, intensity, setting a tone. If LaMelo's the guy, Con Knipple and Brandon Miller as those second and third guys, Knipple can do a lot off the dribble that I think has been underrated with him, that is perfectly slotted in next to one other in LaMelo primaries. And so I'm going to say treat with Con Knipple.
Let's
as
go.
An off-ball guy, but because he can do a little bit more off the dribble as well. Speaking about Klay Thompson, so far this season for the Dallas Mavericks, he's averaging 8.2 points per game, 25.9% from three, 20.8 minutes per game. Klay Thompson is washed. Trick or treat?
Man, this one's tough. Because I don't know how you score in that system. I mean, that's a really tough offense, I think, for a guy like Klay Thompson to thrive in. You're almost asking him to lean into the parts of his game that are washed. I mean, there are parts of his game that are washed, I think, and in trying to create, those are going to be part of it. I think I'll go treat on this one, but I feel like it's unfair. I'm going to say treat like it's true, but I also think that if he were in a different situation, he would look way less washed than he is at the moment.
Unfortunately for Klay, I think we're entering the stage where he is becoming a headline of Meg Thee Stallion's boyfriend. I think unfortunately this is a treat, and dude, he's 36, you know, and he's had some major injuries in his career. He's had an unbelievable Hall of Fame career. I don't think it's insulting to say, okay, this is probably it. He's been on a decline, and this is maybe the year it falls off for Klay. I don't think it's a bad thing.
That's a rough offense, though. The Dallas offense is right there with New Orleans to watch in terms of what are they doing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's 100% true, and that hurts Cooper Flagg as well. And then you have AD. He has an Achilles injury last night. Not hopefully, like, we haven't heard yet, an Achilles rupture or anything like that, but he was dealing with some type of Achilles tendonitis. AD, he gets traded to Dallas. He rushes back to play through a groin injury, gets hurt, misses the entire rest of the season. And then this year, still maybe trying to prove himself, playing through some type of Achilles issue. That situation could get really ugly, Adam. It could get very ugly in Dallas. And we'll see once we learn more about AD. But that whole offense, as you said, is ugly. And so far, they are not meeting Nico Harrison's high expectations. The Utah Jazz, their win-loss over-under was 20.5. This year, they're 2-2, one of the funner teams in the league to watch. The Jazz are going to hit the win-loss over. Trick or treat?
Man, see, this one is so hard because what is their incentive and how hard is it going to be to keep this going? I think one of the things is young team, young coach, innovative offense, and they do some fun things that probably aren't going to win you a ton of games, but could get you over that 20.5 mark. I'm going to say treat, but only barely. I do think the wheels will come off, and they're already doing some things with this. You know, you look at their starting lineup and they get off to these great starts and they have all this momentum. And I feel like they almost are slow to go back to it, which makes me wonder if they're a little self-tanking already. Like, hey, we proved what we needed to prove in the first quarter. Let's pump the brakes.
I do think there could be something to that already as well. I mean,
they played
13 guys last night. Like, they're going really deep into their rotation, playing a bunch of guys who may or may not be part of the future there, and some that are, and you're developing those guys. Clearly, the incentive is development. The incentive is not maximizing wins. They just happen to be 2-2 so far. But I would say treat.
Two games, slightly. Yeah, they've had two games this year where they were up like 30-10. And then the starters come out and don't check in again until like 2 minutes to go in the half. And you're like, hold on a second. You built a 20-point lead with these guys. Why not go back to them? Oh.
I don't know. We're just trying to develop, guys, says Will Hardy. I mean, I think you're spot on there. I'll take the slight over, though, with them. So I'm going to say a treat. They win 21, 22, 23 games, something like that. They're not going to win 41. Something goes severely wrong with the Jazz if they win 41 games. You want another lottery pick. All right, got two more for you. Denver edition ones here. Cam Johnson, so far this year, 8 points a game, 38.5% field goal, 31.3 three-point percentage. Cam Johnson is a bust acquisition for Denver. Trick or treat?
I'm going trick on this one. I mean, it would be treat so far through four games. He's been pretty atrocious. But Denver has been great. And this is part of what's exciting about the Cam Johnson fit is he looks very uncomfortable. The thing that concerns me, there's only one thing that concerns me about it, and that is that he looks nervous. Which is weird because Denver's kind of blowing everyone out right now. They had one loss and three pretty comfortable wins. And to be nervous in that setting to me is like, hey, the team is really good and you're going to be additive to what they do. But he looks a little gun-shy at points. He looks a little lost at points. And then even when he's open, you just don't get the sense that he's shooting the ball with confidence. He's got air balls. He's got some tough misses. So I think he's just a little nervous on this new team where efficiency is at such a is so valued. I mean, the Nuggets are just so efficient that I think for a guy like him where shots don't come all the time, you're like, okay, I got to make these. I think he'll settle into it, but that is the one thing Denver needs. I mean, Michael Porter, for all the criticisms about his basketball IQ and all these different things, he wasn't afraid to shoot it when he was open. Cam Johnson has to develop some of that, but I think he will in the coming weeks. I don't know if it'll be right away, but I do think within 20 games, he'll find his rhythm and the Nuggets will take off even more.
I'd say trick for sure. Cam Johnson will be fine. He'll find his way. This offseason, there were six head coaching hires. The Knicks, Suns, Spurs, Grizzlies, Kings, and Nuggets made David Adelman the interim from interim to head full-time head coach. David Adelman ends up being the best head coaching hire from the 2025 offseason. Trick or treat?
Man, I'd have to go back through and look at that list again because it was a lot of guys. What I will say, though, is that I'm very excited about what I've seen from David Adelman. Really, at the end of last year when he took over, first of all, what a difficult position that is. Three games to go in the regular season, extremely high expectations for your team, but they had done nothing to that point in the regular season to make you think that they could be title contenders. And he was very dynamic in what he did. I mean, remember, they weren't playing zone throughout the course of the year. They started playing zone against Oklahoma City, and it really gave them problems. That was something he came up with on the fly. You come into this year, and I think he's been very creative in a lot of ways. First of all, he said that they're going to play Valanciunas and Jokic together, a la what they do in Houston. They haven't done it yet in the regular season. They did it in the preseason, but that shows you he's an outside-the-box thinker. He's running a 10-man rotation, which is something Michael Malone never did. He's turned Peyton Watson from a corner floor spacer, stand in the corner and take threes, into a ball handler, sort of a backup point forward role, and he's thriving in that. So I just look at it and say that he has brought creativity and newness to the Nuggets, and he seems to be a guy that is in the 100th percentile in terms of X's and O's creativity. So I think that's exactly what this team needed, and I think he's going to be a very, very good coach.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. It's whether best or not, only time will tell. I'd say so far this season, he looks like an A-plus hire, the right decision. And a guy for a long time in NBA circles, people said, yeah, David Adelman, guy who's going to get a chance. David Adelman, you hear that name a lot right when it comes to assistant coaches that'll get opportunities. Well, I think he's showing why. And you also got to credit the Denver front office for bringing in some of the pieces that they did to give him these kind of toys to play with, these lineups to put out there. I mean, we're going to see, and we haven't seen it for any extended time yet. I can't wait until we see Jokic Valanciunas out there for a 10-minute stretch. It's going to happen. And I think that's going to be very fun to see the things that they do in Denver. Adam, are you excited for the NBA Cup starting on Friday?
Not at all, to be honest with you. I'm not an NBA Cup guy, so to me they're just games with ugly courts. And by the way, my least favorite thing about
ugly
the NBA
courts
Cup,
Adam, the courts look
don't
better
tell me you're
this
into
year.
This
they look better
oh,
this year
on,
they look they
man.
Look the best they ever have. These are the best courts
you're
ever
than
have.
Me. You have a couple. Yeah, look at the best they've ever had. They've always looked horrible, so it's the lowest bar to clear. The bar's literally on the ground. But here's what I hate most about them. When you go through and watch all of the, highlights of the year, we're going to go watch Luka Doncic's best highlights of the season. There's always those weird court ones that just pop in there and look so out of place out of nowhere. And you're like, wait a second, what happened? Everything, oh, now we're back to normal. I hate it. And they're just a game. It's just a Friday slate of games is all it is.
Yeah, you know, when I like gather clips for an article or whatever, sometimes I see those. I'm like, I can't use that one.
Can't use it. I'm not even kidding. You can't use it.
But I like it when it's happening. I like it when I'm watching the games. That's the thing. I don't know. So that's one thing I'm curious about for people. Like, are you with Adam or are you with me? So, you know, one more thing here. Just comment on Spotify or YouTube or hit us up on social. Do you care about the NBA Cup as a fan? Or like, do these games mean a little bit more to you as a fan yet? Or is this colorful courts, ugly courts, as Adam calls them?
It's the ultimate thing that feels important for like 1 second. Like the immediate moment it's happening, it feels like, oh, it's a cup game. And then once it's over, you're like, okay, that was just a Tuesday game. I will say this, and I'm not even kidding about this. I don't remember who won it in either of the 2 years. And I think it was the Lakers year one. Was it not?
The Lakers and the Bucks.
I did not remember that the Bucks won it. And so like last year, and that's and I'm an NBA guy. So that tells you how much stock I put into this. It just, it happens. And then I forget about it.
I hope someday it becomes something that matters. It's just going to take a long time. To me, I've said this on the pod before. I think it's going to have to be something where it's sustained dominance, where a team wins the NBA Cup, they win 68, 70 games, and then they win the NBA Finals, where they're the first team in NBA history to have best regular season record, win the NBA Cup, and win the NBA Finals, like a triple crown for a team. I think if that happens, then maybe it becomes years from now a barometer of, well, it's been 10 years, 15 years, 20 years since a team was the best team in the NBA from start to finish, October through June. I think that's where maybe something becomes important. But until then, it just feels like the Lakers and the Bucks, like really, they want it.
Yeah, the courts honestly somehow make it feel less important. So I'll just throw that out there. To me, I see the courts and I'm like, all right, this is goofy. This is what that is.
Interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people will feel that way. So if you do feel the same as Adam or the same as me, comment, let us know. Adam, this is a lot of fun, man. Appreciate you joining me. Please let people know where they can find all your stuff, and you're everywhere.
Yeah, me and Tim Legler, all NBA, as well as Jason Timpf on Fridays. And then if you're a Nuggets fan, make sure you're checking out DNVR Nuggets. We have some really cool stuff up on our YouTube channel there, including one-on-one with Peyton Watson and a cool breakdown of the Nuggets first week.
Adam, keep up the amazing work.
Awesome. Thanks, brother. What's funny is you asked me, I don't feel like I have that many hot takes, but you asked me a questions on a few of the things I actually do have to my takes are actually hot on, like Banchero. You know, most guys I'm pretty neutral, you know, a little high, a little low. Banchero's one guy where I'm like, he sucks. I don't like this guy at all. He's a losing player. It's maybe my hottest take. I am so out on Banchero.
Yeah, man. I think Orlando, they should take a real evaluation this year because they're clearly serious. There's a lot at stake for them with the Bane trade. If they're serious about taking that next step, which clearly they are by doing all that for Bane, they have to take a hard look at Banchero and say, okay, can we move this guy to a team that's just trying to gamble? The Kings, the Pelicans, like one of these kind of teams stuck in the middle or at the bottom of the league where they're like, yeah, we'll take a shot on a guy in year four, still in his early 20s. Why not? Because the thing with Banchero is some people will say, why would you end up selling on him right now? Well, this is still a sell high phase when you're in year four of your career. It's not a sell low yet, but it could become a sell low. And that's the fear if I'm the Magic right now. That's the fear.
Well, and I just feel that way about him. So I don't think he's going to become a magically great shooter. So I think the longer you get the sample size up, you're right, the more the value goes down. So we'll see. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Adam. Appreciate you joining me today, man. This is fun.
You bet, brother.
Big thank you again to Adam Mades for joining me today. Make sure you check out All NBA if you don't already know. I'm sure you do. Next Monday, we have Jason Timpf on to talk NBA, who hosts a great show, Hoops Tonight, and he's on with All NBA, as Adam said as well. Got Jeff Goodman. We're going to preview the NBA draft this year, some of the prospects to watch on the morning of college basketball starting up next Monday. And then Thursday, Tom Haverstraw is back from the Big Number. Looking forward to have Tom back on the show as well. And next week, we might have an all-star player as well. I don't want to say the name in case there's postponements or cancellations, but hoping to have an all-star player on next week as well. Thank you to Emmy and Sarah for producing us today. Thanks to Father John Misty for the beautiful music. As always, thanks to you for giving us a listen. Talk to you on Monday. Have a great weekend and a happy Halloween.